You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for tuning into Americana Music Profiles. The next episode starts right now.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Auckland, New Zealand's Jesse Wild has a music style that favors the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, Paul Simon, Fleetwood Mac, etc., and has accumulated quite a bit of musical success on his own, including being nominated for Best Producer and Best Engineer at the 2019 New Zealand Vodafone Music Awards. His personal encounters with John Cougar and Bob Seger are fascinating. Jesse joins me on this edition of Americana Music Profiles to talk about his career and his unique journey to the United States to meet those two musical heroes. Hi, Jesse. Welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us all the way in Auckland, right?
Auckland, New Zealand. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We are talking at the end of June. How are things there for you guys?
It's actually starting to get a little bit cold, but it's not cold considering where you guys are from, but it's cold for New Zealand anyway.
Yeah, I guess you guys are sort of on the kind of the edge of your fall or winter, right?
Yeah, it's coming right in. Yeah, it's the start of our winter, really.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I always find that interesting, that perspective, that we are exactly opposite in our climates at the time.
Yeah, it's we're also a day ahead of you, so it's 9 o'clock in the morning. Yeah.
Yeah. it's amazing to be
Thursday.
Able to be able to do this. You know, I'm in summer, you're in winter. We're an hour apart or a day apart, and we can still sit here and have this conversation real time. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, I'm in your future, so it's actually Thursday morning.
Yeah, right. Somebody else told me that a couple months ago. I thought that was.
I love that. Yeah.
I love that statement. Yeah. That's cool. So tell me a little bit about how you got started in your musical career. How did all of this begin for you?
Mate, I've been doing this. I guess if you go right back to the beginning, I was 11 years old, and I was watching a rerun of the 67 Elvis comeback special.
Yeah, okay.
On TV, and I talked to my mom and I said, "Yeah, I want a guitar. You know, I want to learn how to play guitar." And that's where it all started for me. 11 years old, had about a year's worth of lessons from a guy who lived down the road, and he ended up telling me after a year that he'd taught me everything he knew. And he put me onto his guitar teacher, who was this old, long-haired guy who grew up in London in the 60s. And that's when it really started for me. He started teaching me all these songs and started encouraging me to sing and started encouraging me to write songs and from about the age of 17, I was playing professionally. I was 3 years underage back then. The drinking age in New Zealand is now 18, but back then it was 20.
Okay.
And I used to start setting up underage at these bars, jumping up on stage, and bands would let me get up and sing. I always had a pretty good voice, and before you knew it, I had my own band, and I was making a living out of it.
That's cool. What was your inspiration musically growing up?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I guess it's interesting that Elvis, like so many people, inspired the Beatles and everything. But really, that was just seeing him doing it with an acoustic guitar. And but really, my major musical influences. I grew up in a sort of working class family, and my dad was a builder, a carpenter, mm-hmm. and but he used to, in his spare time, he used to build boats, and
cool.
he used to, you know, from scratch. We'd have these Keeler sailboats, and we'd go sailing. And my dad had an incredible vinyl collection, and it was like Paul Simon, Simon and Garfunkel, Rolling Stones. My mum was a huge Beatles fan, Elvis, and I grew up listening. And my dad was a big Bob Seger fan, and I guess that's really where it started for me, listening to Bob Seger's songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I just loved the songwriting, you know, like albums like Against the Wind and Night Moves.
Yeah.
And that kind of changed my life and made me want to be a songwriter. And then years later, I was getting into, I went through a punk stage, you know, listened to a lot of Sex Pistols and things like that. And then I went through a sort of a heavy metal stage, and then someone gave me an AC/DC cassette. It was one of my neighbors. And he said, oh, don't worry about the stuff on the other side. It's just something my brother listened to. And on the other side of that cassette was a John Mellencamp album.
Oh, wow.
Paul Camp. And that changed my life as well. I mean, I became a huge John Mellencamp fan after that. And then a few years later, I first heard Steve Earle, Copperhead Road. And so that my three main influences would be Bob Seger, John Mellencamp, Steve Earle. And fortunately, I've met all three now. So that was a goal of my life, to meet all three of those guys, and I did. So.
How did that happen for you? I read where you've had the opportunity to visit the States and play some here, but to have those three guys, three artists, be in your path, how did that happen?
Yeah. Well, it's a long story, but I'll try to cut it short. So when I was about, after playing for about 4 or 5 years in a band in New Zealand, I was probably about 22. I decided to go on a bit of a, what we call an OE, an overseas experience. So a lot of Kiwis will go over to England and Europe. And I got to England and it was just all pubs. And I just spent the last 5 years playing in pubs. We did a lot of festivals as well, but mainly it was bars and pubs. So I didn't really like England that much. I didn't like the weather and stuff. Funny, I had this dream of always going to the hometowns of my three biggest influences and hopefully getting a chance to meet them. And as I was telling the story to a guy, I was staying in this flat in London, he handed me a book called Coast to Coast, and it was written by Andy Bull or something like that. And he was a journalist in London, and he'd written this book about traveling around America, going to the hometowns of all these rock stars, and he'd never met a single one of them, although he tried.
Yeah.
But it was a really good book. And then I ended up, like, I found out, back then it was before, we didn't have Google or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
This was in 1994. So I just, somehow I found that he was an editor of one of the newspapers in London. So I just rang up the newspaper and I got a hold of him, and I went out, and he said, so we went out for lunch together with the author. And I told him about my story, and I told him what I wanted to do. I just booked 3 tickets from London. I booked one for, San Antonio, or first one was Detroit, Michigan. That's where Bob Seger was from. He's from Dearborn.
Mm-hmm.
And then I booked one for Bloomington, Indiana. I knew that's where, and I booked another ticket to San Antonio, Texas. That's where Steve Earle grew up. So I had these 3 flights. I flew into, I remember it was 1994 because the World Cup soccer was on.
Mm.
And I happened to be on a plane with the Irish soccer team, and we drank the plane dry of whiskey. It was a really, they were going crazy. So I ended up in Dearborn, Michigan, not knowing, and asking around, where does Bob Seger live? And absolutely no one knows where he lives. So I ended up going to the Henry Ford Museum, I think it was the museum. And there was some, back then it was some newspaper articles on microfilm. And I found the newspaper article about where it only happened a few days before, where Bob Seger had gotten to sort of a verbal bar fight with one of the car workers. And he was saying, why have you never helped us out? And it was this bar in the Avenue Diner. And I drove out to the Avenue Diner. I think it's the only lead I had. Bob's obviously been there before. Sat down at the bar, having my Kiwi accent, some guy just come out. It was like a country club kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They valet parked my car. I was a bit underdressed, long-haired guy. And I ordered a beer, and the guy right next to me had just come off playing golf, and he noticed my accent. He said, what are you doing in here? And he's here for the World Cup soccer. And I said, no, I'm here to meet Bob Seger. And he goes, do you know him? I said, not yet. And he said, you wouldn't believe this, but I heard he just moved in a house across the lake from me. And then I said, well, did you have his address? And he said, no, but he had the name of the subdivision. And I found an old, back then we didn't have Google Maps.
Right.
Found an old, I had a map. I'm not going to say the name because he's, Bob Seger values his privacy. but I found the name of the subdivision. I found the name, the road with the same name. And I drove out there. It was about 10 o'clock at night. And I just had the psychic sense of this town. And this sounds like a stalker, but I didn't bang on his door at 10 o'clock at night. I decided to I ended up sleeping in the, I had this big old car that I was driving around in. I slept in the back of it by the lake. And then in the morning about 10 a.m. after I'd gone for a swim in the lake and freshened up, I just went, knocked on this door. There was no fences. And it was the wrong house, by the way. I parked two houses up because I didn't want to, you know, park right outside Bob Seger's house.
Right, right.
And then this old lady answered the door, and I said, is Bob Seger there? She said, oh, no, he lives two houses up. So I had parked directly outside of his house. And so I walked up to his place, and it was like a little intercom, and I rang the intercom, and his wife answered. And I said, is Bob Seger here? And she said, who are you? And I said, I'm a musician from Auckland, New Zealand. And I had my first CD out, so I showed her a picture of the CDs over there. And she goes, oh, Bob doesn't live here, but if you leave it on the doorstep, I'll see if I can get it to him. That's fine. I'm just going to go up to my car and write a little note to Bob. And she said, that was fine. So I went up, and I was just, I had the door of my car open, and I was writing a little note on the CD cover. And around the back of the house, Bob Seger came up wearing a, I remember he was wearing a white, like a basketball singlet, and a blue short. It was really hot and sunny then.
Mm-hmm.
And in Michigan, it gets very hot.
Yeah.
And he came up, he was smoking a cigarette, and I think the first thing he said to me is, who the F and hell are you? and I explained who I was, and he goes, how the hell did you find this place? I told him the story about meeting this guy in the Avenue Diner. And, he goes, this is not how it's done. And I said, hey, I didn't come all this way to piss you off. And then I could see he was a little upset. And he did. And then I was about to leave. And he sort of poked his head in the window of my car. And he goes, where'd you say you're from? And I said, again. And I said, Auckland, New Zealand. And he said, well, get your car off my lawn and put it in the driveway, and then we'll talk. So then he calmed down. We went around the back of his place, and I had my guitar, because I never used to like leaving it in the car.
Right. It was
really hot, and so we put it in the shade, and we sat up beside the lake and ended up having a coffee and a couple of beers and smoked a few cigarettes, and I got to play a few songs on the guitar, and we had a really nice chat out. It was great.
That's cool. I love that story.
That's how I got to meet Bob Seger.
Did you keep in touch at all?
One thing to me, because I was writing it. Well, I ended up meeting his manager, Punch Andrews, after that.
Uh-huh.
But not really, no. I didn't have a phone number, and he wouldn't take a photograph. I did meet his manager, Punch Andrews, after that, and that was just, I just looked him up, and he did say one thing, please don't publish my address, because he'd just moved house. He'd had problems with a stalker a few months before.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And I wrote a journal of my travel. I still haven't published it. One day I'll publish it. But no, I didn't really keep in touch, but I did get the chance to play him Night Moves, which is my favorite song, and I told him the story how I lost my innocence on Christmas Eve, and as I was driving home, that song came on the radio. It changed my life. I was like, it's like Bob Seger was there.
Wow.
He liked that story, and I said, it made me want to be a songwriter.
Wow. That's cool. That's such a cool story.
So he did give me some advice, his advice. True story, and he gave me some advice. His advice was don't knock on Steve Earle's door, he'll shoot you. and he said something about you'll never be able to knock on John Mellencamp's door, and I found out why a few months later.
Wow.
So
That's cool. That's cool. I appreciate you sharing that. Those are golden moments, and that's cool. I love that. That's part of your journey.
Well, it's interesting because he did ask me, and he said, what would make you come all the way here? And I said, like, almost every musician I know has had a desire to meet him. And it's not like I don't speak of rock stars or anything like that. They're incredible musical influences. And they always say don't meet your heroes, they'll disappoint you. But to be honest, none of those guys disappointed me, and it was just great to meet them. And he understood in the end, it's kind of good for the soul to meet. When you listen to so much music and it influences your music so much, I said, it's like a child not knowing his father. It's like an orphan. And it's like, it was like, they were like the three fathers of my music.
We're going to pause for just a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the interview.
Sounds like there's a song wrapped up in that story somewhere if you haven't written it yet.
It certainly is somewhere. I haven't written it. Yeah, the only one out of the three I got a photo with was that I actually, on my website, jessewild.com, you'll see a photo of me and John Mellencamp. And I've got wet hair in that photo too, because I've just been for a swim in the lake in Indiana with this girl I'd met. And that's a whole other story. I met him at his rehearsal studio in Belmont Mall in Indiana. And the difference between John Mellencamp and Bob Seger, if you go into Bloomington, Indiana, everyone you talk to will draw your map, John Powell. Everyone knows where he lives.
Okay.
when I was in Devil, Michigan, they were like, I think he lives in L.A. I don't know. I don't think he still lives here anymore. And you get to his house, and it's like, it's an old army base. It's like fortified. And it's got this sort of intercom on a pole. There's this big road going to his house that says, if you're not invited, do not press this button. So you can't get anywhere near him because he's got the fortified walls all around his house. It's a huge complex. And I got to his house, and I drove about 4 minutes down the road from his house, 5 minutes down. It's a bar, it's a junction. It's a bar. And went in there with my guitar, and it was like a Tuesday afternoon. And I always take my, as I said before, take my car out of the guitar out of the car because it gets cooked in the car and stick in that heat. And there were two guys sitting at the bar and the bar lady. I remember this very clearly. Bo and T were two guys sitting at the bar, and there's two Harleys out the front. And Lorraine was the bar lady. And before you know it, I ordered a beer, and because of the accent, they're like, you're not from around here. What are you doing here? And I said, I'm here to meet John Mellencamp. Serious. People live in this whole town and for years and never get to meet John. And they asked me to play some guitar, and I played some John Mellencamp songs just sitting in the bar. It's like there's only three of us in the bar, and they liked it. And he invited me to his house to play some nine ball, and I didn't know these guys from a bar of soap. When they were in the bathroom, I talked to the bar lady, and she seemed like a nice lady. Sort of a motherly type, and I said, are these guys going to kill me? And you can trust these guys, that's all. So I ended up leaving my guitar behind the bar and jumping on the back of this Harley, up to T's house, and we ended up listening to records and playing nine ball and drinking beer, and I crashed the night on the sofa, and next morning they dropped me off back at the bar because I needed to get my car again. And when I walked in, Lorraine said to me, did they mention who they were? And I said, no. Bo was John Mellencamp's best man. I think he's been married a few times. So he's been his best man more than once at his wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And T worked, and T happened to work for John.
Wow.
So that just happened to be, that's the, basically the first three people I met in Indiana. Then about, I didn't, and I was like, damn, I missed my chance to get to meet John. And then about 2 weeks later, I ended up meeting another bartender there, and I got some gigs at the bar, and but one of the bartenders, Sonny, had a place to stay, and he said, why don't you come and stay with me for a bit? And then Bo ended up coming back into the bar and saying, look, I've talked to John, I told him about you, and just don't meet people, but he said his band was rehearsing for 2 weeks, so and if I wanted to stop in the rehearsal studio, I could maybe get to meet the band. So that's how that all happened, and I got some really good photos on my website of me and the whole band. I went in there on a Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. That's when the rehearsal started, and I remember walking in there, and there was a songbook sitting on the coffee table, and they knew I was coming because Bo had let them know. And I think it was Mike Wanchick. So the whole band was Kenny Arnoff, drummer who's had for years. This is 94. Kenny doesn't play. I think Kenny now plays with John Fogerty. And Michael Wanchick was there. I got a new guitarist named Andy York and Toby Myers, the bass player. Yeah. And they were all there. And there was a songbook sitting on the coffee table. And I think Michael Wanchick said, do you know any John Mellencamp songs? And I said, I know anything out of that book. I had that book for my 16th birthday. And I was like, what's it doing there? And Mike said, I went and bought it from the store yesterday because we forget the song.
Oh, wow.
So he'd gone and bought this big, it was the John Cougar Mellencamp complete songbook.
Wow. That's
cool. And so he ended up grabbing his guitar. I got a photo of playing his guitar. I got to play a few songs for the band. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Sat in on his microphone, on his guitar, and
wow.
Did that for few hours, ended up drinking quite a few. They were drinking diet decaffeinated Pep. I never even knew that existed. And, I think I had a six pack of beer in the car myself. But
wow, that's awesome. So,
and then, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've had this just very colorful career, and you've been able to record several albums, and we're now hopefully on the way out of the pandemic. I know that some of the different countries outside of the U.S. are still struggling to kind of get their footing. But I think you told me earlier you've got a new record on the way, and hopefully tour maybe coming soon with that. Tell me about the
I've
new
been
record.
Doing a lot of gigs.
Yeah,
so because we came out of lockdown quite a while ago. I mean, I lost a lot of gigs after lockdown, but I think New Zealanders are just celebrating the fact that we can go out and enjoy live music. And
yeah.
So, I've been with my I had my last band. I released an album, my last band called Wild Taylor, and I think you had Ed Taylor on your show, and he started a new project, and I've just gone. I've got a new project now called Wild Story, and we just play as we call it the Wild Story Band.
Mm-hmm.
We're on Facebook, but I also have another band called the Jesse Wild Band. And, we do these mini tours, we call them. So we'll go out, play Thursday, Friday, Saturday in a different town,
yeah,
all over New Zealand. And we did that for the last record, and we sold quite a few, and Spotify starting to grow and all of that. The new album I'm going to call Heading South, because one of the songs on it is called, so there's mainly new songs, but I've done one. I'm just finishing off the last one. I've done another version of a song I wrote called Honey, and one of the lyrics is talks about heading south, like going to hell, basically. But I'm really proud of this new record. It's got some really great songs on it, great Americana style songs. There's some kind of rocky ones, and there's some really acoustic one, so
mm-hmm.
A little bit more along the vein of the Wild Taylor stuff. First album was called Don't Blame It On Me, which has done really, really well. We sold thousands of copies up and down the country, physical copies on CD and vinyl. I'm a avid, I love vinyl, and I actually have the only operational vinyl lathe in New Zealand, so I hand lathe all the records for the Wild Taylor album in my recording studio.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And yeah.
So then this new one is supposed to be out when? When do you anticipate that being available?
Well, it's probably going to be out in about a month or so. I'm going to sort of, release it. It wasn't that long ago we released the last Wild Taylor album. Maybe it was 2018. It doesn't feel like that long ago.
Right.
Yeah. COVID and everything.
Right, sure.
So if you go onto Spotify and you search up Jesse Wild with an E, and there's no I in the Jesse, you'll find all my stuff. I'm on YouTube and all the other platforms, like Apple Music or whatever. You'll see all my albums there. But, yeah, I'm going to probably release the single at a time because that's how people seem to do it these days.
Right, yep, that's the new thing.
Yeah, my absolute favorite song on the album is the song I wrote for Bully the Rambler, which I wrote after I was driving down Route 66 several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I stopped in a little town. I think it was the town where Bully the Kid died. It's Santa Rosa, New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got his gravestone there. I've had this dream, and I wrote the song for Bully the Rambler about how maybe me and Bully could have been friends back in the day.
That's cool.
And it's a really good song. Yeah. So, as I say, I think my favorite song from my last record is a song called Ain't Gonna Let You Let Me Go. It's a song I wrote. It's on the Wild Taylor album. It's a song I wrote about the mother of my child when
mm-hmm.
we separated. And she decided we were over, and I decided we weren't. That's before had a daughter. So yeah. That's probably my favorite song. I Ain't Gonna Let You Let Me Go. There's a lot of good songs. And just recently I've been lucky enough that I had a song placed on a TV show with my publisher. I have a publisher here called Song Broker. And they, out of all my catalog of hundreds of songs that I've written, the one song I wrote for my grandfather's 90th birthday, I wrote it on the morning of his birthday. I always leave things to the last minute, and they wanted me to perform something at his birthday. And so I thought, I'm not just going to perform a cover song, and I'll write a song about him. And my cousin had written a poem, and it was very factual. But it just didn't have, to me, it didn't have enough heart and soul. I loved my granddad. He was like my dad years when I was fighting with my dad, although I get on well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just sat down about 10 minutes, the song came out, and I jumped in. This is my first studio. I've owned two studios over the years. Got a really nice one now in the center of Auckland called Studio 38 Wild Records. And I just put my harmonica brace on, and I jumped in there, and I played guitar and sang this song live and played some harmonica, recorded it, made about 30-odd CDs. Because I can do all of that in my studio, and I just handed them out, and I performed the song at my grandfather's 90th, it only just debuted about a month or so ago. I found out that that song was chosen for a TV show called The Broken Wood Mystery, which is a New Zealand TV show, but it actually debuted in America.
Wow.
And I'm on season 7, episode 2, and the whole context of that. He's driving down the road, and he puts the main character. It's like a murder mystery thing. It's got a huge following. It's actually really big in America. The Broken Wood Mysteries. It's big in Europe.
Yeah.
And it's quite big in New Zealand. And sometimes they play like 7 seconds of your song. But that song that I wrote is about 3:15, and I think they play 3:10 of the song in the episode.
That's cool.
They're like an hour and a half, these episodes.
Yeah.
They're quite big.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And the whole context is he puts this cassette, he's driving down the road listening to me on a cassette, and then one of the cops from the cop station is leaving, the policeman, and he hands him a Walkman, like an old cassette Walkman, and the guy's like, yeah, this is handy, like I have a lot of cassettes, and then he pulls the cassette out of his pocket and he goes, and it's, I think his name's Mike or something, it's like Mike's favorite country song, and he hands him the cassette. Apparently, I'm on that, and the song I wrote for Blood is Love, I wrote about my granddad.
Yeah.
And my mum was really, really proud of it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So it debuted in New Zealand about 10 days ago, on the 20th of, it premiered on TV One, our biggest TV station, And on the 20th of June, which because there's a line in that song which goes, blood is love and it's thicker than water. And I was reminded of that the first time I held my daughter. And so it just happened to debut on my daughter's birthday, which is pretty cool, the 20th of June.
That's awesome.
We had a big dinner at my mum's house and all the family were there watching me on the big screen.
That's cool. Well, I appreciate your stories, Jesse. They're awesome, and I wish that every musician, I hope they do, has cool stories like that, and I know it's helped shape you and your career, and we certainly wish you well with the new record on the way out and your touring. And once again, the website is jessewild.com, and we hope that the rest of your music does as well as that last song.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you, mate.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.